I gave my life to Christ personally, grew up in church, gave my life to Christ personally. You know, there's a difference. Gave my life to Christ personally, my decision, not my parents. Gave my life to Christ personally at age 16. And then a year later, and this is the kind of the gap I want to bridge to help explain a little bit of my heart. A year later, my friend Chris Dixon invited me to join the Voices of Unity Gospel Choir. And his mom, Martha Dixon, Miss Dixon, was an accounting teacher at the high school, and I took a class with her, Miss Dixon, and she started putting pressure on me because she knew how much I loved gospel music. She knew how much I loved John P. Key and the New Life Community Choir, and I had just gotten my first Kirk Franklin tape, cassette tape. That was life-changing. I will never forget the first time that I heard Savior More Than Life to me. And I was so excited about gospel music. And Chris said, well, why don't you come sing with us? I said, Chris, I can't come sing with you. I'd be the only white guy in the black gospel choir. But he would not leave me alone. He's like, no, we want you. Come sing with us. It's not about your, so he invited me and I came, and Miss Dixon, she would tell me every time, now you better come. I'm counting on you, you better come. And so I came, and it was amazing. I sang with them all year. Now let me tell you a few things about that. Number one, they were so gracious to me. On our spring concert, when we would march into the sanctuary, there was a little processional from the back of the church into the sanctuary. And when they were first teaching it to me, it was a little complicated for me. It was a little bit more than I could handle. They simplified the march three times until I could participate. I know I hadn't read a scripture yet, but I'm just sharing with you today. So the spring concert comes around, and I make all of my friends come. Eric, I don't think you showed up at my spring concert. I'm still bitter, but it was at Monk's Corner AME Church, and they gave me a solo. Now, I found a VHS tape, and I wonder, would it be okay? I know there's a lot of serious stuff going on in the world. So this is what and I'm going to bring this together in a moment and tell you where my heart is and what I want to say to our church today. But first, I want you to, we'll take a little trip back to Monk's Corner AME, Voices of Unity Spring Concert, 1998, the year of our Lord. Check this out real quick. This is the introduction.
The next song is No Weapon. And Stephen came to the concert last year, and he was so excited. And he told a few of the choir members, I'm going to join worship. Just play your song. Good. That's all he could talk about. And he's been with us for the whole year, and it's been a blessing having him, because he's a serious young man. He's also a youth minister at his church, and we thank God for him. So he's going to lead the song, No Weapon.
Now, if I thought you would enjoy it, I would. Well, I'm not sure if you're interested in hearing a few bars of my solo at the Voices of Unity. I don't know if you would be interested in that. It's not very convincing at Blakeney Matthews, so I'm not going to. Just a few bars. This is painful for me. Just a few bars. Just a few bars. This is when it was cool for your shirt to be three sizes too big, by the way. Just for the record.
Yeah. Oh, well, thank you. Thank you.
So, I was showing that to you so you could understand why that when I heard that this AME congregation that welcomed somebody who was different into their church, why it impacted me, because I have been on the receiving end of that kind of open arm Christian love. Let me clarify, I didn't show you that to get cred, street cred.
See, I've always loved black people here.
You know, that's not why I showed you that. I was showing you how much they loved me to let me come in. My childhood, as it relates to race, is a little bit confusing because my mom taught me consistently not to judge anyone by the color of their skin. She learned that from her dad, who was a Methodist minister. He served in that Methodist church. He was so cool. My grandfather was the man. He was the man. They brought in three people to speak one night in the church where he pastored. The council, the leadership council, wouldn't let the one that was black speak. He said, if he can't come, I won't come, and sat with him in the car while they had church and got left that church as the pastor as soon as he could. So that's on one side of my family. So on the other side, you got my dad. And my dad came from a home that was very, very racist, frighteningly racist. I didn't even know until this week how deep it was when I was talking to my mom trying to understand this. Because there's one conversation my dad had with me when I was young that has stayed with me, where he said, and I'll tell you about that in a moment, where he said some things that still ring in my head today, and it's taken me all my life to understand why he said them, but I think I understand it now. It was passed to him. It was passed to him. It came from somewhere. It was passed to him. And I live in a world where I talk to a lot of white people who like to live in denial that it's not still being passed around. And I hear people say things like, well, I'm not racist, but... And it's hidden in these little phrases. It's hidden in these little things. It's not only hidden in the little phrases, but it shows up in big ways that we see in society. But it starts with the heart. And they didn't get that being born. Somebody put it there. So I can't fix everything today, but I can lead you today to check your heart at a time like this. It said that no father, even being evil, wants to give his kid a snake when his kid needs a fish, wants to give his kid a stone when his kid needs a loaf of bread. That's what Jesus said. Yet as fathers, when we pass on prejudice to our children, we're handing them snakes all the time. We're handing them stones all the time that they might grow up and throw at somebody who's different than them because of the ignorance that we perpetuated through our perspective and our prejudice that wasn't checked in our hearts. And it's got to stop somewhere. I know I might not say it right today, but at least I'm saying something. Stop denying the divide. We're called to bridge it with the cross. So, please. Please. Please be seated. My dad, when I was about 12 years old, called me in one day, and I had some trouble with a black student at school, and I was telling him about that. And up until this point, I'd never heard my dad say anything about other types of people. I'm using the construct of black and white because that's what I understand. It goes far beyond that. But when I told my dad what happened at school that day, he shut the door. Never forget this. This is a dad who coached my baseball team, black kids and white kids on the team. It blew my mind. And he said, I've been waiting to have this talk with you. And he unloaded. I mean, just the worst, most vile stuff that you can imagine. And I'm 12. And so he's telling me, he said phrases, I won't say a lot of the phrases that he said. I wouldn't even say them to quote them. But he said, this is how they are. You see? This is how they are. And he started to pass down all that hate that had been given to him. All that hate that he'd been keeping inside. All of it just came out, and it just came out. And it got in me. It got in me. He was given a snake. He was given a stone. And you know what? What does not heal gets handed down.
One thing that stands out to me is it says do unto others. It doesn't say wait till someone does it for you. It says you take the first step. It's like it's an action. It's not just having, okay, this is the right mindset. I need to do the right thing. It's actually going out and doing it, not waiting till someone does it for you, but taking that first step of bridging the gap that he was talking about.
You know, I'm glad you said it in that perspective, because any time that I've ever heard of that, it's always been when somebody do something bad and you say, well, you wouldn't want anybody else to treat you that way. But when we talk about it in the context of love, you know, you want to be loved. So why don't you initiate the love? So I'm glad you put it in that perspective. I can look at it different.
And the way he went and told the story, first, he has a good way of adding humor into a conversation, especially when it's something that's a tough subject. And taking us down the path of him singing and how he was embraced, I think that helped kind of lighten the mood a little bit.
For me, my parents raised us telling us that, you know, we're never going to be good enough because we have black hair, you know, we're not white. And so that's something that they put into all of, you know, my siblings and me when we were really young. So I kind of grew up with that in the back of my mind.
If you think about it, that's exactly what a culture is. It's a passing down of good things or bad things through generation to generation. And like, for example, in my case, since I grew up in my Hispanic environment, I thought that I accepted everybody until I jumped the circle of that community. And then I knew, well, I think I was loving my people, but I wasn't accepting everybody else as I thought I did, you know. And when I heard that message that he said, well, what is not healed is passed down, I said, well, I've been having things in my heart, that hidden things in my heart that I grew up thinking they were right. And, you know, it really touched me because when you find out the problem and when somebody points a problem in you, now you say, well, there's work to be done inside of me.
I know I'm grateful for my parents kind of proactively addressing that with me and just teaching me just great stuff about Christ's love and transcending all those boundaries. And so just thinking about like what we want our family to be like, I was grateful for that.
I remember my daughter, she was 12 last year, and she did an audition for a play. She was going to she wanted to be Annie, and she won. And then, and at the school, everybody was, almost everybody was black. And, you know, then the older girls, they were like, you know, trying to fight with her because they wanna do what she was doing. And I remember I was talking to her and I told her, you know how they are. And when the pastor said that, I was like, oh my goodness, what I'm doing. And when I get home, I talk to her and I say, and I told her to, you know, to forgive me because I was doing wrong. So it was very good for me.
You can't move forward if no one wants to talk about it and just brush it under the rug. So it's kind of like, I'm putting it out there. Here's the issue. Now we need, what are we going to do? How are you going to do self-evaluation? And how are we going to change?
I listen to this message, not only from a race perspective, but gender or, you know, other kind of stereotypes that came to mind. I had to check my own heart on some stuff that, some of my thoughts, just being honest. So it was really, it was a message from there that hit me and stepped on my toes. Like, yeah, maybe it's not a black and white thing, but there's other ways you have done things. So it just made me have internal reflection.
And my dad, he came to hear me preach, and I've told this story before, so I'll be brief about it. But he came to hear me preach at my home church. And he came to the altar, and I prayed with him. This was my freshman year of college, and he had a radical transformation in his life. You know how I know he had a radical transformation? He had this stuff hanging on his walls in his barbershop. There was this one flag that he had hanging up, a Confederate flag that he would hang there. And the reason he would hang it there is to start conversations with other people where he could start tearing people down, because most of his clients, if not all of his clients, were white. And one of the ways I knew God had changed his heart is when I went back to visit him in the barbershop and he had taken that flag down. That's one of the ways I knew God was in his heart. Because if you can tell me God is in your heart, but you can hang a symbol of hate, I have a real problem hearing what's in your heart. I have a real problem hearing what's in your heart while you're hanging a symbol of hate. I have a real problem hearing what's in your heart. And I never understood the challenge and the complexity. As a white pastor, I never understood it. I never understood it until I opened my heart to it. And so I'm suggesting to you a couple of things today. One, I'm suggesting to you that this matters. Secondly, I'm suggesting to you that it's our responsibility. Third, I'm suggesting to you that you have a part to play in it. And fourth, I'm suggesting to you that it starts with change on the inside of each of our hearts. It starts there. See, my dad took down that flag, and there was other paraphernalia, racially motivated paraphernalia in his barbershop. He took it down. Some of his customers quit coming. And he kept it down. He let them walk. And I thought that was cool. I watched his attitude change in a lot of ways. I watched him struggle in a lot of ways too, like we all do. You know, transformation is not that clean cut. But you know the memory that I have that I want to kind of leave you with, and we're gonna pray in a few minutes and take communion together as a church. That's something that we've been passed down from Jesus himself that we can always do in any moment of doubt or crisis or joy or pain. And we're going to do that together in a moment. But I want to tell you about Father's Day 2011, June the 19th, 2011, where I'll show you a picture of my dad on Father's Day. This is June 19th, 2011. And I don't know how I remember that I had this picture on my computer, but God must have brought it to my mind this week as an example of what God can do. Because he was handed hate, and he was handing back hate to his son. And then God intercepted and turned it into a love that's so remarkable that today I don't even recognize. In fact, in his own life, by the time this picture was taken, I didn't even recognize. Put it back up, please. I did not even recognize, if you would. I did not even recognize the man that had closed his door and told me this is how. And one of the reasons, he was working in a ministry with a pastor in town, a black pastor in town. And on Father's Day 2011, just to show you what God can do and to give you one example, because see, one heart can cause tremendous devastation or can bring great healing. One heart. We see that this week. What happens in one heart matters. What happens in one mind matters. What we pass to our children matters. The conversations that we participate in, either implicitly or explicitly, matter. It matters what you do. It matters. It makes a difference. This is a gospel issue, though, because what could not have been trained out of him or reasoned out of him, I saw God tear out of him. And I went to see him on Father's Day 2011. I said, Dad, I'll do anything with you today. It's your day. What do you want to do? I'll take you anywhere to eat. We can go get a couples massage. I didn't say that to my dad. How weird is that? I said, anything you want to do. Manny Petty. I said, anything you want to do. He said, I want you to take me to church. I want to go to church. I said, all right. Well, I said, I was kind of trying to take the day off, but I like church. Where do you want to go? He said, you got to take me to the bishop's church. And we drive out in the middle of nowhere. He's telling me every turn to take, in the middle of nowhere. And we walk into this church. And I was watching this little video. In fact, you want to play it for me right now? A Father's Day 2011. And I want you to kind of get a picture of how God can turn somebody's heart. And how God can take a man who was handed hate. Who was handed hate. But when you give God your heart, your broken heart, when you give God your heart, your doubtful heart, when you give God your darkness, there's an exchange that happens at the foot of the cross. And He has a way to fill a heart with love that was filled with hate. And I came today not to offer any grand solution or to be some kind of racial unifier in my own right, but just to ask a question that I think is my part to ask you. What's in your heart? Because whatever change we need to see beyond this room starts in our hearts. And it starts with dads who decide, you know, this is what I was handed, but I'm not handing this on. This stops here. It starts in my heart and it stops with me. I'm not handing this to you. I'm going to talk to my kids about treating people right. I'm going to set an example. The gospel looks like this, church. The gospel looks like this. You can't call His name when He hung like this and stand like that. Like this, they let me sing in the choir and cheered for me and taught me how to march in something that approximated rhythm. And I am who I am. I know we got a lot of work to do, but it's got to start somewhere. And I know that different people have a part to play. We're not done with this discussion, but I want to pause here for today and invite you that as you examine your heart today and say, God, what's in me that I'm handing on that needs to stop and be exchanged? The gospel was an exchange more than anything else. You bring me your sin, I give you my righteousness. You hand me your sin, I'll hand you back my righteousness. You hand me your shame, I'll hand you back my righteousness. You hand me your regrets, I'll hand you back a hope and a future. You hand me your transgressions, I hand you.
The story of Pastor Stephen's dad that just never gets old to see life change like that, that I think it's just such a great picture of the gospel, that our God takes us just like we are, but loves us too much to leave us like we are. And so I just love seeing, like, it just never gets old to see people's just perspectives and lifestyles and everything about someone change when they've encountered Christ.
I remember when that portion of the sermon came up, I kind of teared up, because for that man to be that way for all those years, and to change, I guess, within a couple years of his death, that's nobody but God. Mm-hmm. Nobody but God. I mean, it kind of just gives me chills now. So that was definitely a blessing.
For me, it's
the boldest statement I have heard from Pastor Stephen when he said, we're not waiting on the move of God. We are the move of God. So if we pinpoint the problem in our heart, we have to work on it. God's not going to do it apart from us. He's going to do it through us because we are his manifestation.
And what really jumped out for me in this whole event is what's really standing out, because this is no longer in the media. It's no longer publicized. But the fact that we're coming together now and having this focus group or this round table, if you will, almost a year later, 11 months later, speaks volumes of, like, it's not just because of that incident right then. It's like, how can we continue to push the envelope forward? How can we continue to have race relations? How can we continue to grow as a church?
You know, I got a lot of stuff to change in me, but in order for me to change, it needs to be with the people of God, with the church together. When people look at us, they need to see Christ. So the church is the one who needs to reach out there as a group, as a body.
I felt like our campus had a charge walking out of that weekend of, like, we're the church, we've got to do something, you know, and there was kind of just like the energy coming out of that weekend. It was crazy.
Going home, probably sending my highlight email, and I was just like, man, I love my church. Not to worry about what anybody is going to say, and to bring that situation to light in a church atmosphere. I love my church.